you can't control the thoughts that you have. Like, we can't control like the shit our mind throws at us, right? Like, every single day I laugh because of the curveballs like my mind throws at me. But what we are completely in control of is what thoughts we allow ourselves to believe, what thoughts we let stick versus the thoughts we let pass through.
From the moment you wake up to the moment your head hits the pillow, this is the It's All Day podcast. Your home for knowledge and inspiration about fitness, nutrition, and the mentality behind what it takes to be great. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the It's All Day podcast. I'm here today with Matt Yates, who is a life coach based out of LA, correct?
Yes, Los Angeles.
Well, Matt, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I work with Aaron Diamond and Jordan Duggard. So I heard snippets of you on their podcast, and then I saw a post that you put out that I reshared that honestly, like a day when I was super stressed out just hit me in the right spot, and I'm super appreciative to be able to connect with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, man. And I'm gonna have to give you, wait, can we cuss? Can I say a little bit of
whatever
shit?
Whatever you want.
Like, you heard snippets of the pod, you didn't even listen to the whole thing?
I didn't know. As soon as I heard you start speaking, I was instantly kind of hooked in. There's certain people that I know, and I was telling you before the show, like, I geek out on mindset stuff, and
yeah,
I've listened to some of your posts, and when I go for walks, the more I listen to your IGTVs and whatnot, just to get to know who you are and all of that mindset stuff. I'm like, I was telling my girlfriend, I was like, this conversation is going to be super fun for me because I've never had like a quote unquote, like mindset person on the show.
Yeah.
I'm excited to dive in.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it, man.
So my listeners, people on the show, are my podcast is about fitness, nutrition, and a lot of my clients, what we were just talking about, is trying to break down limiting beliefs that they don't think they're worthy enough to have the body they want with their current lifestyle. They've got a 9-to-5 job, they've got two kids, they're busy. Yes, looking amazing, like the magazine covers is great, and yes, like saying I could work out and eat healthy sounds amazing, but Chris, like, I've got this crazy lifestyle. I've got work. I've got kids. How can I fit all that in and prioritize myself while still focusing on my job? So what do you say to people who go through this type of limiting belief? And do you see this a lot with people you work with?
Yeah, certainly. So I think like a really, really like great place to start with this is like, as we hear the term like limiting belief all the time, right? So like, if we take a step back and like, let's understand what a limiting belief even is. Like, how does that happen? Because like, for me, something that I really like to do with anybody that I talk to or work with, it's like, if we can understand like how the mechanisms at play, it helps us to better like cope and like utilize what's going on or to change it. So like, to speak to like, what is a belief to begin with, really, right? So like, it's a pretty simple process. Basically, like, we are at our core, we are all creation. Like, our brain, the mind, creates. So the mind creates a thought. That thought then triggers a thought to the mind, triggers an emotional response in the body of some sort. So every thought that we think, whether we know what's happening or not, 90% of our thoughts are the same as the day before, right? And that's our subconscious. Every thought that we think triggers an emotional response in the body. And typically the emotional response is what we most identify with. Like, I feel anxious, I feel worried, I feel overwhelmed, right? We don't actually realize there's a thought happening that's triggering that emotion. So then that emotional response tends to lean us into action or inaction, resulting in whatever the result is. So the thought happens like, I'm too busy to eat healthy, right? Like, eating healthy is hard work. I'm too busy, which then causes a feeling of overwhelm, which then leans us into inaction. Instead of cooking that food, we just like run to the drive-thru, resulting in us getting the hamburger and eating the hamburger. Then that result reiterates the thought. When you get the hamburger and you don't eat the healthy food and you don't see that it's actually easy to make the healthy food and doesn't take that much more time, it reiterates the thought that making healthy food is hard, which then emotion happens again, result happens, and it just turns into a loop, a thought loop.
Yep.
Thought loops that continue to run then turn into beliefs. That is what forms our belief system. It's simply a thought loop that has gone unchecked and just run over and over and over again in the background. So a limiting belief is nothing more than just a thought loop, just like I just kind of outlined there. And what's powerful about that is when you understand that mechanism at play, you can't control the thoughts that you have. Like, we can't control like the shit our mind throws at us, right? Like every single day I laugh because of the curveballs like my mind throws at me. But what we are completely in control of is what thoughts we allow ourselves to believe, what thoughts we let stick versus the thoughts we let pass through. So what we believe, our beliefs are choices. We are choosing to believe what we believe. So when you recognize, oh, okay, so this emotion, I'm feeling overwhelmed, or the result of like, I'm not eating the foods that I should be eating, or whatever it is, when you realize that and you sit with yourself, you can discover the thought. It takes practice, it takes work, it takes time, it takes coaching a lot of the times, but you can start to discover the thought that's happening. And when you can start to pinpoint these thoughts, and you know that these thoughts, you're choosing to allow that thought to stick, you can change the thought. You can change the belief. Yeah. So I find it helpful like to explain stuff like that, because when people understand the mechanics of how it works, it's like, okay, that makes more sense. Mm-hmm. So to your question with the limiting beliefs are absolutely, I mean, that really like, our anything that stops us in life is a limiting belief. Like, we are the only thing that ever stops ourselves. We are the only limitation that we ever face.
Yeah. I'm rereading Mark Manson's book, Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And he mm-hmm. talks in the beginning of the chapter is the feedback loop from hell, to where yep. you can get consistently stuck in this rut. And it's what you said, the emotions. There's people that I know listening to that too. I think some of my clients who I hear there, that's going to be like a huge light bulb moment, to where they mm-hmm. first even realize this is just an emotion that keeps happening over and over again, which is causing the action. There's some that I know who recognize it, or at least can comprehend it, but the fact that they can also recognize that they've made the wrong decision multiple times, that they end up beating themselves up for making that wrong decision that continues the loop. Mm-hmm. How do you work with people getting out of that? Because that almost feels like it compounds on itself.
Oh, it absolutely does. I mean, you know, the first thing I normally ask somebody is like, what's the purpose of that?
Of beating themselves up?
Yeah. What's the utility in that?
I know the answer. I don't think it just keeps
There's not an answer per se, but like everybody's response is different, right? But when you have somebody that is like a chronic, like beat the fuck out of myself upper, like it's like, well, what's the point? Like, what's the purpose in that? Like, I like to have people like visualize themselves like standing in front of themselves and like having a conversation with themselves when they're talking, like people who are really, really like kind of stuck in the self-talk. Like, I challenge them, like when you catch yourself, when the inner dialogue's happening, stop and visualize yourself standing in front of yourself and you're having a conversation with yourself. And then in that moment, see what you're saying, hear what you're saying, and ask yourself, would I ever speak to another human being the way that I'm talking to myself? Powerful. Like, if I had a friend that was trying to lose weight and better their life and be healthier to live longer and to, so they can spread their impact right on this world, on this earth, like, would I look at them and go, you're fat as fuck. You can't lose weight. Like, go shove that cheeseburger in your mouth, fatty. Absolutely not. Like, no way. And then vice versa. Like, would you ever let somebody talk to you the way that you speak to yourself? No way. So I find that that's a very simple but powerful visualization of like, examine the dynamics of the conversations that you're having with yourself. And then take it one step further, find a picture of yourself from when you were 4 or 5 years old. Like, ask your parents, I don't know, like dig one up. For some of us, those might be easier to find than others. But like, visualize not only yourself standing in front of you, visualize the 4 or 5 year old you, like that inner child us, and examine how you're talking to yourself. And it's really powerful. That a lot of times people have a really hard time doing that. Or I'll say, look at yourself, like stand in the mirror. People can't make eye contact with themselves in the mirror. And then we know, like, then we like narrow in on the issue.
Mm-hmm. No, that was when I went through a breakup where I went through therapy. These were some of the biggest things that I had. One, I was with my brother in Tampa, and he had a crazy drunk friend who was also a psychologist, and she was like, I'm gonna give you a free session right now. And I was slightly intoxicated, and I was like, let's do it. I just got broken up with, I'm down. She knew I played soccer, and she told me, she goes, you've got two coaches that you've probably had in your entire life. You've got a soccer coach who every time you fuck up yells at you, berates you, makes you feel smaller, makes you feel worse, and you don't want the ball the next time because you're afraid you're gonna fuck up. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the other coach who, as soon as you messed up, tells you, it's all right, don't worry about it, get on the next ball, you've got this, I believe in you. And she asked me, she goes, which one of those coaches would you want to be coached by? And the obvious answer is the second one. She goes, okay, well, you're doing that in your head to yourself every time you beat yourself up. Mm-hmm. And you get to pick, you're in control of who you get to pick you want as your coach.
Yep.
And so many people, I don't think, even realize that they're in control, that they can pick that. And like you said, they're afraid. The other one that she made me do was, most of my emotional traumas are from relationships. And my first one, I remember specifically sitting at the lockers, like hugging my knees, head in my shoulders, crying. And she goes, I want you to visualize yourself going back into high school and sitting next to that kid. And what would you tell to that kid right now, knowing what you know now, like how this isn't going to affect you long term, how you're going to get out of this, how you're going to become this much of a better person from that moment, mm-hmm. and have that conversation with those kids. And both of those obviously ended in tears, but it's being able to lean into that resistance and really confront a lot of the pain. And it's something that took me a really long time to do. It took me till that very last one, till I almost lost my job. I was freaking out. Like, I eventually had to tell my boss, who was a Marine, who was already in my head, this super tough macho man, shows no emotion, and told him, like, hey, man, like, this breakup with my girlfriend, like, I think I'm going to quit. And he's like, he told me that he went to therapy, and have you ever considered it? And me saying, okay, this Marine, who I think is super macho, if he can go to therapy, then so can I. Mm-hmm. But it's trying to figure out, how can you make those... the conventions, or like talk with someone without like being a therapist for me with my clients, and how to break down these walls and get them to confront their deepest pains, mm-hmm. because I know so many of them are afraid to do it. But I also know on the other side is all of the answers they're actually looking for. So with what you do, how do you, besides, I just want some other ideas besides like looking in the mirror, looking at pictures of them when they were a child, breaking down like these deepest pains and almost getting them to open up to you enough to have that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I just show up, man. I just show up and I connect with people and it happens. Yeah. That's just part of the, like of my superpower, I guess, whatever you want to call it, that I've been given. Like the profound thing about what I do is I don't act differently. Mm-hmm. Like in a coaching session, or like it's who I am through and through. You know, there, and like I appreciate and I acknowledge your question. I also know that that question and the way that you phrase that is exactly what everybody's looking for, right? Like, what's the answer? What's the one thing? What's the thing I can do mm-hmm. in order to confront and get rid of the pain? How, like, and the answer is there is no answer, there is no right or wrong way, there is no one size fits all like answer for that. It's different for everybody. It takes time, it takes patience, it takes commitment, and it takes the wherewithal of like wanting to be a better person. Like, this isn't for the faint of heart. Like, straight up, it's not. And that's why we live in a world where 99.9% of people walking around are asleep. Like, they're all asleep at the wheel, right? Like, because it's not easy to wake up, and it's not easy to do the work on ourselves, the inner work, to become like better people, to ascend above like the bullshit that just keeps us tethered to the day-to-day like crap that we all just carry around with us because we don't think we're worthy mm-hmm. of not lugging that weight around with us. Like, we all think that that's just part of the deal that we signed before we came to this earth, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Where was, I know for me, a lot of mine triggered from breakups, me confronting the breakups and then getting through them. And that's how I kind of started the work to get through this stuff. Where was your first wake up moment? I'm curious.
Great question. So for me, so I was born and raised in West Virginia, middle of bumfuck nowhere. still is. And so I was in the closet for 24 years. So the like emotional turmoil and anguish and just all of this, all of that, that I consistently like inflicted on myself over and over and over again for those 24 years, I'd say was definitely a really like pivotal piece in me coming into doing the work that I do. Because like the thing about it is like, I don't know what it's like to experience the breakup that you had. You know, I wasn't in your shoes. I don't know what it's like to, you know, like a lot of like women I work with, a lot of the issues that they'll bring to me. Like, I don't know what it's like to be sitting in a workplace, not getting paid the same amount like that men, you know, I don't know what that's like. I don't know what it's like to be just spoken to and catcalled and touched the way women are, like, you know, just, I don't understand that. But what I do understand through being a closeted gay male for such a large portion of my life, I do know what it's like to feel and be different and have people look at you and deny that and say, that's not real. That's not a thing. Like, suck it the fuck up. Like, I know what that's like. So I don't know what your breakup was like because I wasn't there, but I can empathize and connect with you on that, because you in that moment, scared to go to therapy, not knowing what to do, like you were feeling something that you had other people invalidating until your superior said, go to therapy, and validated that for you. I know what that's like.
Yeah. My older brother, he's gay as well. So I remember him when I was in college, him first coming out and sending me the message and letting me know and being like, I remember he sent me a message of, I hope he still wants to be my brother. Mm-hmm. And because of that pain and everything, and I knew it and everyone knew it around me, like at any party we went to, everyone's, Chris, is your brother gay? And I'm like, he might be. There's a solid chance he is, but I'm not going to be the first one to ask him because like, what if I'm wrong? But as soon as he did tell me, I remember calling him like, dude, you're still my brother. You're the exact same person. I'd be more worried if you weren't, based on the way that you do act and the way that you know who you are. Like, come on. Yeah. If you met my brother, you would know like 100%. But that's very, I know my brother went through the exact same struggle. So even though, like you said, even though I don't know it, I can empathize because I had a brother who went through the exact same thing.
Absolutely. And we all have those struggles. We all have those things. Like, we all are living just equally complex lives. We all operate under this like notion or this story where like we're the hero of our own story, right? Like, we all think our life is just like a little bit more complicated and complex than everybody else's. It's like that's the story that we have. And if you like walk around Times Square, like in New York City, and like look around and just see like hundreds of thousands of people, and it's like every single person around you is living just as complex and complicated of an existence as what you are. Like, that is the human experience, and it's baffling. And it's also hilarious, like the way that we all fear, like that, like this, we all have this fear of judgment, right? Like, and it's like, what, like you're walking around Times Square.
And I do.
Oh, okay. I was like, is something happening? Mm-hmm. But like, you're walking around Times Square and then you're like worried about like, okay, like, oh, I spilled a little bit of like ice cream on my shirt. Like, oh God, people are going to see. And you look around and what you don't realize is every single other person is in their head worried about how they look because they're fearing. So nobody's actually seeing each other. Mm-hmm. Nobody's connecting. Everybody is so in their own head about themselves, worried about what others think, that no, there is no moment of connection with anybody else.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk more about that, because from my own experience, that's something that I've struggled with forever, probably. I know growing up, one, I was a chubby kid. So like, I was the chubby kid of the group. Now I'm into fitness, and like, there's still that little child who's still in me that I still work with. But like, I was chubby. So when we played sports, I came in back from recess, guess who was sweating the most? This guy right here. Mm-hmm. And then as we got into high school, I was still like the chubby kid. My friends were getting girls. I was the one who wasn't getting the girls. I went into college. I played soccer in college, but my first couple of years I didn't play. So everyone's watching the people on the field, but I'm not playing. So now I'm not as good as the other guys on the field. Mm-hmm. And it like continued on and on and on. And then thankfully I found CrossFit. And for me, CrossFit was a great equalizer because everyone had the same weights. Everyone was going after the same time. It didn't matter how old you were. It didn't matter how much you weighed. Like, whoever was on the top of the leaderboard, here's metrics. And like, if you won, you won. But if you lost, that's also still on you. You lost. You can't you can't hide behind anybody else as well. But I've had glimpses of exactly what you're talking about. I've done mushrooms a couple times. I've done DMT a couple times. And one time in particular when I did mushrooms, I was in the jacuzzi in my friend's backyard, and he has like a huge, beautiful backyard, all nature stuff. And I was like, wow, like I'm in nature over here, and like I'm in my own little world, and there's a door that just opens up into their house, and I can see the TV on, I can see somebody watching TV, and I could literally like change. I was like, okay, this is my universe right here, the jungle in the jacuzzi, tripping on mushrooms, and he's over there watching TV, and he's mm-hmm. in a completely different universe than I am. Mm-hmm. And I've had glimpses of it to where you realize exactly what you said. Everyone's in their own head. Everyone is in their head. Like, I would get worried about showing up on Instagram, and I go through spurts of this on Instagram, trying to share my message, trying to talk more about this mindset stuff, confronting your fears, getting into the nutrition side, all of this. And then I start thinking right before it, like, yeah, but like Jordan and Aaron, like they've been doing it much longer. They're much more successful. They probably know much more that they're talking about than I do. Like, why should I talk about it? Somebody's going to, as soon as I post it, they're going to only look for the bad stuff. They're only going to criticize me. They're going to Google search everything. And then like the phone just slowly goes down, and then you end up not posting it. And you're someone who, I look at your content and you seem to not have the fear of showing up on it. And you said it yourself, like whenever you see you, whether it's on a Zoom call right now, whether it's with your client, you're the same you. Mm-hmm. And I've been able to like cross over to that realm and then come back. So how would you, if you were talking to me, help me to stay more on that side of where I don't fear judgment?
Okay, so let's do it. Okay, so then it starts with a question, really, like, when you say you're fearing judgment, mm-hmm. okay, so you are fearing what I think about you.
Correct.
Okay. How do you know what I think about you?
I don't.
Okay. Can you ever know what I think about you?
Not unless you tell me.
Even if I do tell you.
Well, true. No, you could be lying.
Correct. So there's no way for you to ever know what I or anybody else is actually ever thinking about you. You can only ever know what you're thinking because you're the only person in your head. I can never know what you're thinking about me. Mm-hmm. Right? So then again, it comes back to what is the utility and walking around your life living based on what you perceive others perceive about you. What's the point? That's a question.
I know I'm thinking. I think one answer that I'm thinking would be to stop, like keep me exactly where I am. Keep me safe. Mm-hmm. Like my mind's like, don't do it. Just don't do it. Stay here. It's cozy right over here. You don't have to put yourself out there. It's a little bit dangerous. Like you're a little bit worried about it. Just stay over here. And then the
that's separate from a fear of judgment though.
Correct. And then I think
that's not fear of judgment. That's you wanting to stay safe and stay comfortable. Now you could be using this judgment thing as like kind of the excuse as to why you want to stay safe, but notice and recognize that there's a gap, but those are two very different things.
Okay. This is a question that I have to ponder for sure. because I think the other one might be like, when I do look back at myself and take a step back a couple years ago, like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, like I was almost getting a DUI. Like I was not doing a lot of things, partying every weekend, like being a shithead, not playing soccer as much as I wanted to, like not going to class, like all these bad things. And now I've gotten to a point where I'm coaching 16 clients. I've got this podcast going. My business is doing better than it's ever been in its entire life. I just celebrated a 1-year anniversary with a girlfriend. So like relationships are in a much better place than they used to be. Yeah. Thank you. And there's a lot of really good stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And there's a fear that when is this like going to crumble? Like, is it going to crumble? Can I keep up with this success? Do I deserve this success? Like, I know I want it to keep going. I want to get to 25 clients, but can I handle 25 clients? And then all of this stuff starts coming in. So then I know if I do put the posts out, if I do keep doing the work on social media and growing that, it's going to give me what I'm afraid of, but it's also exactly what I want.
There's a fine line between our greatest like desires and hopes in life and our biggest fears. There's a super thin line because they're often the same or very similar. What we want the most is also what we fear the most.
Yeah. Cause like I've always secretly like, I want to be like a superhero if we're being honest. Like I love superhero movies like so much. Like I think they're the best. There's the guy who does all the work. He sacrifices it. Like he's like admirable. Like you just want to be that guy. But you also like you see those guys like in the movies. One, it's a superhero. It's not real.
Maybe it's the gay man in me, but I look at like a Spider-Man or a Batman. I'm like, oh, the costume could be better. But I'm like, you know, I'd probably change the outfit a little bit. But yeah, I get it.
Yeah. But then part of me also knows like it's fictitious. Like obviously you can't live specifically like that life. And also like almost in every movie, like the guy like misses out on a regular life because he's so focused on having this superhero life. So do you want to miss out like on this quote unquote regular life? Or do you want to live that superhero life that's just like completely servitude? Because I know like secretly, like I do, like I love helping people like so much, but I'm also selfish in a way of like, I want to make sure my cup's full so I can serve people, and trying to find that balance of like, am I serving too much without making sure I take care of myself enough? How much of myself is enough?
Well, hearing you say that, I think it's like a really like great kind of visual for me with the cup thing is like to think about like envision yourself like, okay, you are a cup in my left hand and in my right hand for anybody listening and not seeing us right now. Like I'm holding another cup, right? So I've got these two cups. So the cup that is you, in order to pour into other people, right, to make the impact and do the work that you do, there's one of two ways that you can do that. You can take your cup and you can pour the water out of your cup and into the second cup over here, right? But then that leaves your cup half full. Mm-hmm. Or you can pour into your cup just to the point of overflow, and that overflow from your cup then trickles down and fills up all of the cups around you. But in the latter example, that inherently means if there's overflow that your cup is completely full. Mm-hmm. Right? So being selfish is super important. Like you've got to put yourself first and pour into yourself and do what you know you need to in order to fill yourself up so you can show up and shine the brightest for everybody around you. And when you do that, that abundance, that overflow pours into all of the people around you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't leave you depleted.
Yeah. I think that's especially what you're talking about when it comes to like the 99% of people out there who are asleep, and the 1% are those people who are literally doing that to where they're just completely overflowing their own cup and giving the abundance, the leftover to everybody else. And everybody that's in the 99% will talk shit about the person who's the 1% saying that they're so selfish for only caring about themselves, when in reality, doing that is helping the 99%. And if the 99% did the exact same thing, we'd have a whole different number game here.
Correct. Correct. And there's also messaging from society with that, right? Like there's always a hesitancy with people. It's like, well, if I put myself first, then I am being selfish, or I am being self-centered, or I'm being narcissistic. And there's a huge difference between those things. And it's just, there is a reframe there, an understanding. Wait, if I don't put myself first, if I don't pour into my own cup, then I can't show up for other people, period.
Can you explain the difference between those two? Because speaking for myself, I remember in high school, I labeled myself a narcissist almost on purpose, because when I was in high school, the first way I did start getting girls was every guy told me like, you gotta be an asshole. Girls like assholes. Girls don't like nice guys. And we legitimately made a list of the most dumb things you've ever seen, like way over the top on purpose to just get you in the mindset of like, you're way better than girls. Girls are beneath you. Like horrible stuff. But because of that, trying to come out of that narcissism, when I now work with people and I am focused on myself selfishly, but also selflessly, it's trying to make sure that I never go back into that realm of narcissism. So can you differ the two for people listening?
Well, yeah. And I mean, so like, I mean, I could Google the definition of a narcissist and we could sit there and pick that apart. But really, like, what stands out to me that, like, as the primary difference is, like, one is malicious and the other is not. Like, one is putting others down in order for to build yourself up, and the other is not that. The other is building yourself up to pull others up with you, not a power exchange where it's like, if I go up, you go down. It's like, we can both go up.
Okay.
Right. So there's a difference. Like I understand what you guys were trying to do with the list, and as like, in a sense, what you were trying to cultivate there was confidence, like self-confidence to show up. Right. But what happened was you were feeding into, again, the societal narrative of like, oh, you've got to be an asshole. You've got to hurt others in order to succeed. Mm-hmm. And that is a hunk of bullshit. And that's a story that permeates to this day, everything in society, like constantly. It's like, oh, in order for me to succeed, like, that's the conversation we have all the time, the lack versus the abundance. Like, is there more than enough for everybody? Or in order for me to have, do I have to take from you? Because there's not enough. There's only one. And if there's only one, then either you can have it or I can have it. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. It's like seeing life through a lens of, we can all do this together. We can all go up together. We can all have the lives and build and create what we want, the experience we want in life together, and have, we can all have that. Or there's a trait like, if you have it, I can't.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I've gotten so much better at. One, I figured out girls a long time ago. I figured them out like 2 years ago to where.
Yeah, you just celebrated your 1 year. It sounds like you're doing a good job.
Like, thank you. Hopefully she's listening to this and she thinks I am too. But even with now, when I first started really focusing on this coaching business, right when COVID hit, I joined the mentorship with Jordan and Aaron, and being in a group of 30 or 40 other coaches, and you start hearing everybody else like, oh, I just closed 3 clients, closed 10 clients, and my roster is at 40, mine's at X, and I'm like, I'm at 4. And it gets into this like comparison, like they're better than me, they're better than me, they're better than me, until eventually I got to the point where I knew in my head, I was like, I know that if I can talk to X person who's struggling with their food, their nutrition, the habits around it, the people who think they're too busy to be able to put themselves first and actually focus on their nutrition, if I actually spoke with them and worked with them, I know I can help them lose weight. Mm-hmm. And that thought became so concrete in my head that I no longer feared any call with any client. Anybody that's come on with me, if I get them on the phone and I do a Zoom with them and I talk to them, there's no fear. And I still hear people in the groups dealing with this of like, oh, I didn't get them, like, uh-oh, like I don't have a client, to where it's like, dude, if that person actually isn't somebody that I really want to work with, because I've got a specific type of person who I know I can help, who I know is going to be my favorite type of client, if they're not that client, there's other ones. Like, it's okay if I turn them away. It's okay if I say no. And that amount of certainty and confidence has now become one of the sales or the easiest thing in my business. Because once I do get them on the phone, I know whether, if I can help you, I'm going to tell you, and I believe that I truly can. And I know I can because I've heard the results. If you're not that person, I'm sorry. We can find you another coach. I know 39 other ones who might be a better fit for you, but it's not me.
Right.
And that abundance mindset has helped me so much. And I think a lot of people with weight loss and everything, like they think, oh, like they're really fit, like they're doing it, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. If all my friends are the fit ones or whatever, like I can't be that one because I've never been that one. And they don't think they can do it. And trying to break them out of that mindset is one of the hardest things. It's so much harder than the food. The mindset
Because here's the thing, bro. You can't break them out of that mindset. Mm-hmm. That isn't up to you. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. They've got to want to do that.
Yep.
You can only lead a horse to water. And the other piece of that, like what I heard you speaking to there and the example you were using of like the comparison and selling, like that, what I heard you saying was for the longest time, you were intertwining your self-worth with your net worth. You were basing your perception of your worthiness as a human being, which, by the way, is 100%. And it was from the day that you were born, and it will be until the day you die, because inherently as a human being, you are worthy of whatever you want and desire in your life, period. 100%. It never fluctuates for any human being. If you are a human being, you are worthy, period. End of discussion. But what we do is we tend to use things like that. Like, oh, I'm going to use, like, career is a big one. Like, oh, my, the work that I'm producing, the amount of clients I have, whatever it is, that is the measurement I'm going to look at and use to depict my worthiness. So when I have a client that says no to me, then my worthiness decreases. Mm-hmm. Which is a lie, and it's super detrimental to people. When and it's hard to untwist that. But in the entrepreneurial realm that we're both in, it's something that we see a lot. But your net worth, how much money is in your bank account, or how well you're doing at your job, or whatever that is, that has nothing to do with your worthiness as a human being.
Would you say that when people are first listening to this and hearing what you're saying, can anyone pretty much decide those? And I think I had a podcast about this talking about like your core values. Would you say like your core values are basically what you would determine as your own scoreboard for what you do that makes you worthy? Or is there, do you have like core ones that you think everybody should have that determines their worthiness?
I'm not sure I completely understand the question, but your values are your values. Those, like, again, that's not something I can depict or you can depict for anybody else, mm-hmm. per se. And there, again, worthiness is a black and white thing. There is no gray area with this. Like, now, if you don't believe that you're 100% worthy, that's separate from your worthiness as a human being. But it, again, inherently, if you are listening to this with your ears as a human being, your worthiness meter is at 100%. It always has been, and it always will be, regardless of the values or of where you are in your growth journey or where you are with your career or where you are in your relationships. It doesn't matter. Like, you are worthy of having and creating whatever you want in your life. It just is a matter of you taking the time to come into the present moment and be present and see that the power in the present moment is available to you, and you're worthy to have to change that trajectory to create that new life or different life in that moment. But see, that's really the problem. The problem is we never come into the present moment. The problem is we never stop long enough to go, whoa, I'm living my entire fucking life in the future or in the past. I'm never here in this moment, which is the only thing that's ever real. Mm-hmm. And the only ability to change anything that we're doing exists only ever in the present moment. So if you never come to be in the present moment, then you can't change.
That's
the tricky part.
That's very true. Yesterday when me and my girlfriend celebrated, we went to Topgolf, and I used to play golf as a kid. I'm trying to get back into it now. And mm-hmm. I told her last night when we were talking about it, she's like, "Did you have fun today?" And I was like, "Honestly, I had so much fun playing golf because the first like 10 shots were horrible because I've been telling my girlfriend, let's go play Topgolf. I want to make sure I look good. These first shots better like go straight right mm-hmm. where I want them to." And they were like horrible shots, slice, slice, slice. And because every time I'd swing it, I'd like look back at her and I'd be like, "Did she like," and I'm like, "Oh my God, she's probably thinking I'm horrible." And mm-hmm. then eventually I was like, "All right, Chris, like what did you used to do when you were a kid? Like you just looked at the ball. You only focused on the club hitting the ball and your follow through. And if you did that, like you'd have a good swing." And then as soon as I did that, I got so dialed into like the dimples on the ball and was so focused on that. My shots were way better because I was able to turn everything off outside of my brain and just focus like right there. And I remember talking to her last night of like, I had so much fun playing golf. And I think it's because I was just so present. I was so in the moment of only focusing on the golf ball that I got a chance to turn my brain off from everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because before you did that, you were operating from the fear. You were the fear of judgment. Mm-hmm. You were fearing what she thought about you, and fear is future based. Mm-hmm. But you weren't existing in the present moment. You were somewhere off in the future thinking about when you fucked it up and you didn't hit any balls, like what, how she was going to respond to that or what she was thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what would you, so I meditate mm-hmm. and I do like Joe Dispenza's meditation.
Yeah.
I do Wim Hof every once in a while, but trying to stay present, especially like in this entrepreneurial like realm of where you need to be on social, you need to be on your phone, but your phone's also a distraction. You need to be able to get your work done. How do you stay present day to day in order to get the work done you need to without getting distracted and then all of this stuff just kind of coming in?
Well, first of all, you get to stop needing to do anything because you don't need to do anything. You get to do everything. Everything's a choice.
Okay.
You don't have to do anything. You don't have to be on social. You don't have to be on sales. Like, you don't have to do any of that stuff. You get to. So when you reframe the, like, all of the, I need to, I have to, into get to, that in and of itself completely reframes the energy that you bring to something. When you realize, wait, everything I'm doing in my life is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
I just recently like restarted the Joe Dispenza meditations because before I could not sit for 20 minutes. I'd make it to 10 minutes and that's like right when it actually starts. And I'd look at my phone and I'm like, God, halfway. But in it, I've gotten to the point where now when I do it, that's one of the biggest things that I focus on is like when he tells you like put your hand on your heart and like open up to like that inner divine and whatnot, and just speak on the things that I'm grateful for. Of like, I'm grateful that I just woke up and that I get to go do this meditation and that my job allows me to, I get to work out for a living and I get to help people work out and eat healthy foods and do podcasts. And like, I got friends who work at engineering companies from 9 to 5 and they got to wear a suit and like all that shit to me sucks. So once I'm able to start stacking all of that stuff, it becomes so much lighter. Like you said, it becomes so much easier, but I'll get that in the meditation. And then like, as soon as the meditation stops and like the headphones come out, like the rest of the world just comes back in and it like goes away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to remember that and keep it in the front of my head. Cause I feel like as soon as the world starts, it just gets pushed right to the back.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, like one of the easiest ways to there's no answer and no, like, oh, here's like the 3-step process, which is what every human being wants. Mm-hmm. But something like a great place to start with that is like, start using like fear. So the fear of judgment, which you touched on, start using that fear as a guidepost to help you come back to the present moment. And this also circles back in with what you were talking about earlier with people like, that like talk down to themselves, like that, like harsh inner critic. Start, change the function of that. When you start catching yourself feeling the fear, when you start like, oh my God, what is my girlfriend thinking about me? Because I'm totally just like sucking at Topgolf right now. Like, use that in that moment. Don't get mad at yourself about it. Don't overanalyze it. Just go, oh, there's fear again. Okay. That guy, I remember that guy named Matt, talking about this. I get to use this as a guidepost because I'm not present. So it becomes a mechanism that when you start to associate, every time you feel that fear come up, you realize, wait, I'm feeling fear. Fear is future based. I'm not in the moment. And you use that to just pull yourself back, even for just a half a second. And it'll be super short. And then your brain's going to fire somewhere else. And then you're going to keep going about your day. And then you're going to feel the fear. And you're going to, oh, and you're going to use that to bring yourself back again. And you start to do that and start you. So you change the function of fear. It's no longer something there to scare you. It's something there to help you realize that you're not being present.
It's and so you changing start to the circuitry grateful. Of that feedback.
Yeah, right? You start to become grateful for the fear. And then the fear changes and it dissolves.
Wow. That one was good. That one, I already took notes on that one. I'm going to use that one a lot because I can already get, it's really cool though to me. Cause when you can start looking at emotions, like not as good or bad, but as utility, you can mm-hmm. really start tinkering with
yes,
your own like biochemistry, you can really start changing things. Instead of it being like, oh, fear is a horrible thing, you're like, oh wait, I'm just going to use fear as a tool and I'm going to flip it on its head. So now I'm actually looking forward to fear because that's going to be a nice reminder towards the present.
Correct. Feeling the fear brings me closer to my goal.
I love that, Matt. I think that's an amazing thing that I think so many people can honestly use.
Yeah, like the fun part about the mindset stuff is like, and I don't even like using the word mindset because the word mindset like means every thought, every belief, every experience you've ever had around something. Like it's very big, it's very large. And like my theory on it is like, is it possible, like money mindset, is your money mindset really broken, or is it possible that you're just one or two thought shifts, reframes away from exactly where you want to be with money? And like that really is like versus like mindset, which is like years and years and years of therapy and coaching and all of this stuff, like what we just did there, right? Like it's looking at like at we as human beings create that, oh, it's good or it's bad, oh, it's positive or it's negative. Like in the eyes of the universe, everything is neutral. Everything's net neutral, period. So we label and attach these like, oh, this is good. Oh, no, this is bad. We do it with everything, right? With our emotions. Oh, feeling sad is bad. Feeling happy is good. So when you remove those and you just see everything through a neutral lens, which is what I try to do with everything in my life, it gives you freedom to move pieces around the board game more because you're not operating through this like human designed framework of like, that's good or that's bad. So fear, we look at fear. Oh, fear is bad. Well, what if we remove that badness from fear and we look at fear just for like the neutral thing that it is and go, how can I use this to help? Mm-hmm. And that's what we did.
Yeah.
And you can do that with everything in your life.
Man. That one got me good. That one got me really good. I think there's so many people.
Watch that happen.
I think so many people.
Smoke come out of your head. Mm-hmm. There, it was like a.
They can use it, especially with so many people with food, because so many people, as soon as they have like, I just got done with a physique show, so I was a CrossFitter for years. Eventually, I was like, you know what, like change it up. I'm gonna do a physique show. It was an 8-month process of going from.
Congratulations, man, that's incredible.
183 up to 190, and then by the time I got on stage, I was 154. So I almost lost 40 pounds. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, okay. And it was, to me, it was honestly so much fun to like. There was like. two distinct points. I think I broke the 170 mark, and then for like a week it was god awful, and then like 4 weeks out from the show was horrible because it was the very last end of my diet phase. Mm. And coming out of it, understanding the utility of just food, to where so many people are so emotionally attached to it, to where for me it was legitimately fuel. That was it, towards a specific goal. And it didn't really matter what the food was. I needed certain foods to work at certain amount of times. I didn't quote unquote healthy. It didn't really matter. I was eating pancakes. I was eating Cheerios when I needed to carb up, all these types of things. And coming out of it, understanding like, guys, I wrote down the entire thing and I did Facebook Live breaking it down. Here's the math. And if you look at the math, it's extremely linear. And if you can actually stick to it, it's going to work. So it's very easy to do. There's just so much bullshit around it. Mm-hmm. That people have a really hard time dealing with. Of, I listened to a guy specifically speaking about like when people are eating bad foods, pizzas, hamburgers, they generally associate really good emotions, really happy times out with friends, having a good time. And then when they have to food prep, make the salad, eat the healthy food, they generally associate bad feelings. Mm-hmm. Oh, this sucks. This is burdensome. Like all these types of things. So it's not actually the food. It's the emotions that they're attaching to.
Correct.
Each event that's causing them to not want to eat the healthy food.
Correct.
And trying to break that paradigm and make people understand or just create positive events with other foods.
Right.
And if they can create positive emotions towards those and understand the utility, like you said, being neutral, then you can really start to tinker with these things to where you have a lot more fun with it. Cause it's more, it's just a game to me now.
Right. Well, and again, so like, just like two quick things on that. Like there's no such thing just as a positive emotion, right? There's just like an emotion that you would prefer to feel. It doesn't make one good or bad. And back to like one of the very first things we talked about, how do you rewire that? How do you change that emotional response? You change it by understanding that if there is an emotion happening in your body, then there is a thought that is occurring in your mind. What is the thought?
That pizza tastes really good.
Sure. Like, well, and what you were saying about like, oh, well, like people associate like the pizza with fun and friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay. So like, what is the thought? Well, the thought is that like this salad sucks. Well, like why does it suck? Well, the salad sucks because like it, you know, whatever, it makes me think bland and gross, not fun with friend, you know, whatever it is. When you identify that thought, then you can ask yourself, but what's the reality? Well, the salad is actually nutritious and it's really good for my body. And it's actually giving me all the good things that my body needs to work. Oh, wow. I can plug that belief in and I can choose to reframe that entire thought loop that's been running, that salad sucks because it doesn't mean anything good. Mm-hmm. Because now I see like that is inherently like good for my body and it is giving me what I need to be able to have fun with my friends, to go out and do those things, to not be sick at home.
Yeah, I think also even changing your friend circle to where, this is one that happened for me really well in CrossFit, was all my friends were doing CrossFit. All of us really wanted to perform really well in the gym. So even though we all would go out to eat, everyone's still picking the healthier options. So you're still going out to eat with your friends, mm-hmm. having the healthy foods and creating the fun experiences, having the laughs, having the good time, still probably having a drink, but like you're getting a vodka soda or whatever, but like you're just trying to get drunk anyway. So it doesn't matter. And mm-hmm. like, once you start associating your friend group as well with these healthier habits, it becomes so much easier versus all of your old friends. Whenever you guys went out, what was it? You guys went out, you got blackout drunk, you ate the pizza afterwards, and then you came home in the morning, you went to brunch, and you got all the bad food. So it's all just associated with that. So being able to change the friend group, the environment as well, is also going to help you make these changes in your circuitry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, surround yourself with the people that you want to be like.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Matt, anything else?
I mean, I could go all day long with all of this stuff, but I mean, I think that was a really good place to kind of like loop it back in.
Yeah.
Pun in.
Well, Matt, I want to thank you for coming on the show, man. I honestly didn't even know you, man. And I just sent a message on Instagram and my fear of judgment was that you were totally not even going to message me back or even read it.
I'm glad you called that out because I almost said that to you earlier. I almost brought that up, but I didn't. I was like, I'm not going to embarrass him on this podcast.
Yeah. So that was immediately there in my head. So for you to come back and for us to have this podcast, I'm super grateful. You're a very down to earth guy. And I look forward to honestly, hopefully keeping this friendship going and talking to you more. Because like you said, you could go on forever. So there's other topics I might want to pick your brain on later on.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the It's All Day podcast on the 1513 Network. I'd love to connect with you guys. You can find me on Instagram at @_ChrisPage_coach. And you can listen to this on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google.